Christian Scott is filling up the zone down in AAA right now. Right now, he has a .71 whip in the minor leagues.
Walks and hits per inning pitch.
Wild. That is just ridiculously low.
Payoff pitch. Fastball blown by Rosarena for strike three. There's the first major league strikeout, Ken Rosenthal, for Christian Scott. First pitch swinging, Harold Ramirez bounced to third, Beatty to second, McNeil to first. It is a double play, and Christian Scott fired up in front of family and friends, getting out of the inning with a double play. One run across for the Rays. We're tied to the second. So is that sweeper for a strikeout, is second of the night.
Hamill, Blade, Tidwell, these guys are on the way. 0-2 pitch, slider, he went around, strike three.
It's been a nice sequencing for the 24-year-old, who looks for a perfect frame, and got it. Gets Ramirez, corkscrewing out of the box.
That's what I'm talking about. There's an art to two-strike pitching, and he's doing it right now.
Doug is happy, the rest of the family's loving it, and Christian Scott is making Mets fans here and back in Queens smile. 1-1 through four. Payoff pitch. Waved and missed. On the sweeper, strikeout for Scott. And in his major league debut, he has fanned five.
You can chase that slider way off.
There it is. Got Ramirez for his sixth strikeout, 18 of 20. And I think Carlos Mendoza, after a 94-pitch outing, he was hoping for that last out. Mets starters have only gone seven innings a couple times this year, but what a debut for the kid.
Your comfort level throughout today?
I was super comfortable out there, you know, really trusting my stuff, pounding the strike zone, exactly what I wanted to do. I was able to throw a lot of changeups to righties today, which was huge to be able to get them off my heater and my sweeper.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, May the 5th, 2024. Happy Cinco de Mayo, of course. I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, I come to you right after the most brutal loss of 2024 to date. Mets get swept in Tampa, 7-6. I literally got off a plane at about 12 o'clock, took a little nap because I've been up since 4 a.m., not that you care, had a chance to go down to Tampa, we'll share my thoughts there, my first road trip, a Mets road trip in quite some time, and this show, which I was thinking it out on the airplane as I was flying back from Tampa, has taken a couple iterations, but here's what I could promise you, one of those days where you know, you get on the air and you're like, oh, this is tough. But there's a little bit of good, there's a little bit of bad, and there's a little bit of annoying. I'm not going to say ugly, because it's not ugly yet anyway. A little bit annoying. So welcome to another edition of the show. Had a great weekend going down to Tampa, trip I planned last minute a couple of weeks ago. And I got to tell you, I'm tired, but that's why I'm coming to you right after the Mets-Tampa game. You know, I want to get this show in the books and maybe take a little rest. It's been a crazy weekend for me personally. So Thursday, you know, you guys know I'm a big Knicks fan. You know, 9 o'clock start, Knicks, Sixers, emotional first-round victory for the Knicks. Had a great time watching that game. Game ends a little bit before midnight. I'm all jacked up. Now I got to pack to go to Tampa because I'm taking a 6 a.m. flight, and I'm trying to save some money here. We have a budget here at the Talking Mets podcast, so I'm doing a little connecting flight out of Islip here on Eastern Long Island. You know, the game's at 6:40, so I want to get down to Tampa by early afternoon. So I get up after not falling asleep after that game until like a quarter to two. I get up like 2 hours later. I get on, you know, a flight, get down to Tampa. And I got to tell you, watching the first game of that series, a great game. They were all great games, you know, not going the Mets' way. I was starting to drag a little bit mid-game, and I had to go get a cup of coffee. You know, you go into Tampa, you're used to Citi Field, you walk around. There's Dunkin' Donuts popped up all over the place, and I couldn't find coffee. I finally found the one coffee place. Let me tell you something, and I'll get into the ballpark in Tampa and all that stuff in a minute. You have to really appreciate, no matter what you think about the Mets at any point in any season, and what you think about the ballpark and the cost and the prices and the fan behavior sometimes, and anything else that we complain about as Mets fans, as New Yorkers. You go to Tampa, and it wasn't the worst ballpark in the world. It's an old school dome, right? From a different era. By today's standards, it's a dump. But I'll tell you what, you really appreciate the cuisine and the options with food and drink that Citi Field has to offer. Although they had this bat, a wiffle ball, 22-ounce wiffle ball plastic bat that you get beer in. I mean, you have a couple of those, you're sauced. There was a few fans in the stands that were sauced this week. I'm like, maybe you should lay off the wiffle ball bat beer that you're buying with a Rays logo on it. But you really appreciate the cuisine at Citi Field. That's one of the first things. But I really found it interesting going down to Tampa. I had planned this trip last minute, and I had no idea that Christian Scott was going to make his debut. So that was a very fortuitous bounce, so to speak, for the Talking Mets podcast. Had never been to Tampa before. And here's the one thing I will tell you guys. Now, this weekend, and we'll get to that in the second segment, because we're going to talk about Christian Scott. We're going to talk about where this 2024 Mets team is. We're starting to get to that latter half of the getting to know you phase. And this was a big week of baseball. So while everyone's watching the Rangers, everyone's watching the Knicks, myself included, getting pumped up about NBA playoffs, there was a horrible, controversial week of Mets baseball between Pete Alonso sliding into home, the catcher's interference. So I'm going to get into that because I'm really getting tired of some of the rules that, you know, baseball always tries to legislate stuff that they really shouldn't be. But anyway, the point is this. If you want to guarantee the Mets are going to have a bad road trip or a bad series on the road, put me in the ballpark, and I'll tell you why. Because I was thinking about this on the flight home, and I actually put a little cheat sheet out. Now, I'm not one of those guys anymore that keeps score of every game and writes down all the games that I've been to. I know our good friend over at Faith and Fear and Flesh, I think Greg Prince does that. God bless him. And he'll remember, like, I was at that game, and I remember certain games I was at. But there's a lot of games I went to over the course of my time watching baseball that I can't remember at all. But anyway, so I said to myself, when is the first time I went on a road trip? Or a road matchup, and that was in early 1999, Mets-Phillies in early May, and the Mets would come back and win that game in the old Vet, and I was like, this is great. I go on the road. It was a cool new experience for me, and I'll tell you what, I'm 2-7 in my lifetime. I've seen the Mets 9 times on the road in my lifetime as a fan. I'm never as a member of independent media or otherwise, and every single time, it gets worse and worse. So later that year in 99, I went to 2 of the 3 games where they got swept in Philadelphia. And those were frustratingly. I mean, one day I'll talk about those games when it's more appropriate. I went back to Philly a couple of years later. I think it was the actual day that Piazza had to have that press conference about his sexuality, if you remember. I mean, think about that. By 24 years later, think about that. It was crazy. I think that was the day I went down to Philadelphia. Mets got blitzed and blown out. I was at Pedro's return to Boston They got blown out there. I had a great experience in D.C. later that summer in 06. Mets had a great win and then went to some bars in Georgetown and I had a right jersey on and people were chanting, let's go Mets, and buying me shots. That was a cool experience. But that's really the last time the Mets have won on the road. I mean, it's been 19 years. And I went to D.C. about 10 years ago to see the Mets get beat and Bartolo Colon get beat by the Nats down the stretch in a meaningless season. And then now I go to these two losses in Tampa. So if you want to guarantee a bad series, put Talking Mets in the building. Like the old, what is it, the Bronx Tale? I'm the mush. Go put me in the bathroom. And Tampa, the last couple of times the Mets have gone there, they haven't played there a lot in the last 10 years. But what have they lost, like 7 in a row or 8 in a row there at some point? It's kind of going down now as like the Astrodome or Turner Field or Old Yankee Stadium or how Pac Bell Park was in the late 90s. How, you know, I know the Mets won a game there in the postseason, but that used to be a house of horrors for the Mets too. So Tampa's kind of going into, it was very Astrodome-esque this weekend. Like when the Mets would go into the Astrodome in the 80s and it would almost like everything wrong could go wrong. It would lull them to sleep. The Astros would do crazy stuff. No lead was safe. You know, they just didn't play the way you want them to play. Now, they even, it was a darling tuffle, Aguilera, he didn't get arrested. You guys all remember that. So, that's what came up as I was watching the end. And I watched today at home. I had to get back. I wanted to do the show, of course, and had some other things I had to get done. But really had a great time going down there. Great perspective. A lot of respect for the Rays and talking to some people down there. The amount of work they put into game preparation, I have to tell you, is insanely impressive. I'm not saying the Mets don't do it. I don't know what the Mets do, but you got guys working quite literally around the clock down there, putting in game prep. Christian Scott gets called up, they're putting in game prep. Cole Sulcer gets called up, they're putting in game prep, and they're looking for everything possible to give their coaching staff an advantage. And you know what? They're off to a rough start. They were slumping when the Mets came to town. Arozarena wasn't hitting. He was hitting a .130 on Friday. Of course, I go to town. He hits a game-tying home run off of Diaz. It's a home run on Friday. Hate the hot dog around the bases, but tons of respect. And the other thing is I was doing a little reading. What I didn't realize here is that there is so much baseball history in the Tampa St. Pete area connected to New York baseball. And it's obvious, we should know, but I didn't realize it. And I got a chance, and I actually made a mistake. I called it Al Lang Field. I got a chance to see the old Miller-Huggins Field, which is Miller-Stengel Field, where the Mets used to work out, and the old Al Lang Stadium, which is now a soccer field, where the Mets used to play spring training before they moved to Port St. Lucie. They're still there. And the history, just being able to, especially on Huggins-Stengel Field, where they used to work out, which was originally a spring training facility for the Yankees during the Babe Ruth era. I mean, it's 430 down the right field line, and it's like 340 or 350 down the left field line. 430, and apparently it turns out the reason the Yankees did that was because there's a lake out there, and they didn't want Ruth to hit balls into the drink in spring training. I mean, old school rickety dugout, like think about Doubleday Field over up in Cooperstown. But, you know, the Yankees played at what was Miller-Huggins Field, named after their manager, and then Huggins-Stengel Field later on. The Mets would train there. They would just practice there, and then they go over to the old Al Lang Stadium. They shared Al Lang Stadium with the Cardinals. The Yankees did a little bit at Al Lang Stadium before they moved to Fort Lauderdale when the Mets came into existence. And then I think even the Orioles at Huggins-Stengel Field briefly in the 90s, in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, spent some time there. And it's just not, it's barely, it's not a real, they have high school games there, but they don't even really have a clubhouse. They have like recycling there now and everything, but it's barely high school, barely high school grade. Let's put it that way. And it reminded me, you know, not the dimensions of the old, when I would play sandlot ball in the old St. Athanasius Field. For those Brooklynites in the Borough Park area, you might know that field. I just played ball there for a few years. It reminded me of that. I mean, it's really no different than a field in Dyker Heights that you would see. And I'm giving a lot of Brooklyn references to those in the audience. So tons of baseball history down in the Tampa St. Pete area. As a show that appreciates the history of baseball, it was a pleasure going down there. Great weather. Not a bad community. You know, the park. And I heard a lot of people say it's as bad as Oakland. I've never been to Oakland. But here's what I'll say. Plenty of parking. 18 to 20,000. Obviously, I would say 60% Mets fans when I was there. I don't know about today. They got really good lighting shows and a lot of in-game audio. If you might have heard it at home watching the game, that post-game theme song. I have that sticking in my head because I heard it twice and I heard it again today. I'm like, oh, I hate that song. I'm like, dun da dun da dun da dun da dun, and I'm like, I can't take it. But look, the Rays. You got to give them credit. They play in front of nobody. It's a shame because they're a plucky team. They've got all these banners hanging up. I mean, they put it's not like the Mets with two World Series, but since 2010, they've got way more success than the Mets. I mean, the Mets have a pennant, but the Rays are consistently competing for something. So you got to give them tons of credit. The stadium, it was described to me by some people like out in the Hamptons in the middle of nowhere, but I wouldn't say that. Maybe it's a bit of a drive for some people in the Tampa area and the surrounding area. But I would say this: if they could find a way to get a good ballpark, and maybe somehow market the team in a way that would build some kind of local fervor for it, there might be some there. There was a nice little area to eat and bars and stuff. There's a lot you could do down there. I was talking to my Uber driver from Brooklyn, from another era of Brooklyn. I mean, he loves it down there. I mean, he went down there about 10 years ago. So, and maybe that's part of the problem when you go down to a Tampa area and you're seeing it. And Miami's had their other issues, though, with Miami and the fact that they've torn apart the team 52 times since their inception in 93. In Florida, with all the transient people, it's really hard to build a fan base. But anyway, that's enough of history of Tampa baseball and my trip and my flight and how tired I am from the Knick game. Let's get to the task at hand or the business at hand, and that's the Mets this weekend. So Mets fall to two games under 500, and we'll get to the 2024 Mets because today I think encompassed all those warning signs that were covered up because of some big wins in LA on the West Coast trip. We started to see come to fruition, and we'll get to that. But I don't think you guys realize, or you may not all of you know, what a big pitching day yesterday was. Because you're going to talk about Christian Scott, and that was about as impressive of an outing for a kid. I was there. I had a little bit of a behind home plate, behind the left-handed batter's box view. Guy had a heavy fastball, slider that moved. But to me, what was most impressive was a couple of things. And I think it's been talked about extensively. I think John Harper talked about the poise on SNY.TV. But Scott, the first three batters get on base, get hits. He wasn't getting clocked, but look, typical young player, first start. And back in the day, you'd sometimes expect, no matter how big time the prospect was, they come up, you'd expect them to, maybe take their licks there in the big leagues. But he was able to, with the runners at the corners and one out, where the Rays would maybe have a big first inning after they had tied the game, get a double play, big double play. By the way, Brett Beatty, the defense, the glove, one of the big takeaways watching him. I know he hit a couple of home runs on Friday. That catwalk, too. Does anybody know where that ball went on Friday, the home run? Because I still can't figure it out, and I was in the ballpark. But Brett Beatty's defense, great. So Scott gets the double play, settles down, pitches into the seventh inning. The poise is the first thing. The throwing strikes is the second thing. Yes, I'm going to warn you, because he throws strikes, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to give up some homers. And I know we've seen a little bit of that in AAA. So get ready for that. That's okay. And if I'm not mistaken, his next start will be against the Braves next weekend. So that's a good test. That's an interesting test for the kid. But, we've gotten used to, as Mets fans, going all the way back. Let's forget about Seaver and Kuzman in those debuts. I don't know how televised and how hype those debuts were for the elite Mets pitchers, Ryan, back in the 60s and 70s. But go back to 84 and Doc and the anticipation of that first start. Doc in Houston, more recently, the last 15 years, the DeGrom start against the Yankees, the surprise start when DeGrom was supposed to be a reliever, but then injuries forced him to the rotation and he lost 1-0. Similar, a lot of similarities to Scott's start with the lack of run support that DeGrom got. Harvey's crazy night, 11 strikeouts in 5 innings in Arizona. Matt's, who had as much success with the bat in his debut, going into the 8th inning against the Reds in his debut. And then, of course, don't forget, there was Jason Isringhouse. He had that big 95 before he fell off a cliff as a starter and had injuries at Wrigley Field. And, you know, yes, Syndergaard, he wasn't as successful, but then there was the Syndergaard start in Wrigley, which is the opposite. You expect a little bit of what happened to Syndergaard, which is take a little bit of lumps on that first start. But this could not have gone any better. And I think Saturday was kind of like a coming out party for Mets pitching development, because you're starting to get reports down on the farm, not just Scott at the big league level, Blade Tidwell going into the eighth inning, Brandon Sproat with an excellent five innings down in high A, low A in Brooklyn. Nathan McClain is in Brooklyn, Brandon Sproat is in high A. Nathan McClain, the two-way pitcher, doing great stuff down in Brooklyn. You know, you still have Dom Hamill struggling a little bit. You have this Jonah Tong out in St. Lucie getting everyone out. Yoander Suarez in Double A showing some chops. Yes, Mike Vasil struggling in Triple A. He's getting hit a little bit hard, but his name is still in the mix. And then in the big league club, you've got Buto showing a lot, and you're starting to see it, you know, with Scott's debut. And I don't want to make too much out of one game, but look at how the Rays swung the bats all weekend, knocking around Quintana, knocking around, and you know, Severino helped them with walking the ballpark, but knocking around Severino, who almost pitched a no-hitter the other night, getting to Diaz. It wasn't like they weren't hitting and Scott got an easy assignment. And in that ballpark, like I just told you at the beginning, plays up like the old Astrodome, quite a home field advantage for the Rays. You know, it's an impressive outing. It's an impressive outing. So I think the big takeaway on Saturday is not just Christian Scott. It's the Mets. And if you go, and I highly recommend, if you haven't listened to it, listen to Jeremy Hefner on the show, the New York Post podcast with Heyman and Sherman. He talks a little bit, Hefner, about and gives credit to the pitching development, Eric Yeager's, and the pitching development team that the Mets have put together. And it's been talked about already. Scott was drafted as a reliever at a college and was developed. And I think there's this misnomer that you have to go out, tank, get a top pitching prospect, like a Mark Appel, remember that bust? And that's how you build a team. Look, Doc Gooden wasn't Doc Gooden when he was drafted. He was talented, but he became Doc Gooden. Harvey was highly touted. I remember when he was drafted, but nobody knew who he was going to be. Syndergaard was not, when the Mets acquired him, even the centerpiece of the deal. DeGrom was a late-round pick. He was a shortstop. I mean, Matz was a high pick, but it took Matz years and injuries in the minor leagues. He didn't really debut after 6 years of the Mets organization. He didn't debut, you know, for quite a while. So it's not just going to be about the Mets drafting well. That's part of it, recognizing talent. And we've talked about this. It's about development. And that is what's been really sorely lacking the last 10 years in this organization. We talk about it all the time. We make jokes about they can't develop a middle reliever or anybody out of a bullpen. It's true. And it was even worse as starters, because before Christian Scott made his debut, I mean, the Mets haven't really had a homegrown starter. I mean, okay, Buto has made it into the mix, but think about it. You know, Wheeler, who was acquired and was highly touted, you know, Syndergaard, Matz, Harvey, DeGrom. You know, maybe you put Seth Lugo in there, which you could argue now maybe they should have given more of a start out of the rotation. Gazelman had only one good year. You know, you maybe bring him up. But the Mets haven't really had, what, Chris Flexen? You know, that's really what comes to mind. That's really it. The Mets haven't had anybody really, and Chris Flexen had one good year, and he had to go to Korea, I think, to the Asia to make it happen. So this is exciting. I know this weekend stunk. I know you're feeling angry and frustrated and concerned, and you have every right to feel all those things after the three-game sweep. And after, really, since they hit San Francisco, after the dramatic wins in L.A., this team has not played well. They're 16-18. All right, they're 16-13 if you take away the five-game start of the season losing streak. So they've not been terrible since that opening week. But right now, there's a lot of concerns. But what you should walk away feeling good about, if there's one thing you should feel good about with this organization after this weekend, this lost weekend in Tampa, St. Petersburg, is that there is actually some arms on the way. Can they keep them healthy? totally different conversation. And this is huge because, and we'll get to it in the second segment after the break, pitching is expensive. It's getting more and more expensive. Starters are getting hurt more and more. I made the joke, I think it was on last week's show, that you want to know how ridiculous it is? I think, and I know it's just fantasy baseball, but I got about 10 guys, pitchers, and some big names, by the way, on my fantasy injured list. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you can see it just managing a fantasy baseball team, how hard it is to get pitching, find good pitching, and keep them healthy. And I'm just doing it by clicking a waiver wire button. You know, think about the guys who actually have to do the heavy lifting on this. That is gold. If the Mets can develop what they had and did not leverage in any way, shape, or form because of Wilpon issues that we're not going to get in today, what they had with Harvey and Syndergaard and Mats and Wheeler. And look, I know the best laid plans. You know, you always said you never got those guys aligned at the same time. And those, some of the guys were acquired. Wheeler was acquired. Syndergaard was acquired. Yeah, DeGrom and Harvey were developed and Mats was developed, but two-fifths of that was acquired. Maybe that comes into play at some point. But cost-effective pitching, especially in the next 5 to 6 years, is gold because you cannot have a $500, $600 million payroll because that's where it's going to go if you buy everybody. It was a short-term fix with some good bones on a team to go out and buy a Scherzer. Those were things you had to do. Buy, you know, trade for a Bassett and stuff like that, you know, whatever. Buy a Senga from the Far East. But you need to develop that pitching. And you even see it in the bullpen. You got the ability, Daniel Nunez. You got some arms coming up. I know there's some injured arms in the, on the farm, but you got some arms that you could actually, that they acquired on the scrap heap or as good value signings on the free agent market. But you're starting to see they have some arms they can rely on from AAA, from AA. And that it's been a long, long time. Because I'll tell you what, and we'll get to it after the break. You might, because you're not. I'm not seeing the same enthusiasm and electricity on the offensive side in the system, and it might be early. Yeah, look, Alex Ramirez. You remember that name? He's sitting a little bit down in Double A. Gilbert's not having a great year. Acuna's not having a great year. Those are the big acquisitions from last summer. It's early. It's May. It's Cinco de Mayo. We're not ready to panic yet, but the Mets may need to use their financial might if they could get some of this pitching cost-effective. You could have, in the next few weeks, you will know, at the end of the getting-to-know-you phase, can Christian Scott and Jose Buto be two-fifths of a home of their of the homegrown two-fifths of their rotation? And I didn't forget about Peterson and McGill, but I'm not as bullish on those guys. I'm starting to believe, you know, we'll see Peterson after he comes back. You know, he pitched a little bit better down the stretch. You know, those guys might be, you know, in and out, injured, back in the rotation types. Scott legitimately, between the poise, the demeanor, the throwing strikes, the stuff. I mean, how many times is an Adam Wainwright, a guy that you got to take seriously, who knows a little bit about pitching, whatever you think about it, would gush about this kid? I know that anytime someone comes up and pitches well or plays well or hits a home run that's a rookie, the league tends to, the announcers tend to gush over them. I know that. But I don't think in the manner that I was at the ballpark, I heard it on, you know, videos and whatnot. In that manner, I don't think that's common. So as bad as you feel right now, and you should, because there's plenty of things, this was the good part of the show. This wasn't the annoying part. This wasn't the bad part. As bad as you feel, and you have every right, and there are plenty of those warning signs that I warned everybody about a couple of weeks ago have come to fruition, feel good that it's not hopeless. You're not looking at a situation where there isn't a solution. I mean, the Mets already have shown you, by bringing up Scott, that they don't really need to go to the Tehran route. The only reason they went to the Tehran-type route early in the season because they had to, because the rules said they couldn't bring somebody up. They've brought up Buto. They've got Scott. They already got two young, and I mean, Buto is not Scott. I don't see the same ceiling. I mean, Buto might be a number four, number three type. Maybe. We'll see. But, you know, that's not something the Mets have been able to do, and that's something that a lot of teams right now are struggling doing because of the way, you know, health of pitchers and things like that. So that would be my message. It's okay to dream on Christian Scott, and it's okay to be excited about Christian Scott, but if you just go to X or you go to MILB.com and you scroll down some names, Tidwell, Sproat, McLean. Just yesterday, the same day, they're popping up these highlights on X. The same day Christian Scott was the big, fat cherry on top of the sundae. The Mets have some things going on in their system. Don't let the media fool you. Don't let prospect rankings fool you. And one of the things, and before we take a quick break, one of the things I want to warn everybody, don't get so caught up, because I even, you know, texted my buddy who has been, a scout in the league, who has been on Scott, you know, and I have quoted him a couple of times throughout the years, a guy I trust a lot. He even said, you know, that's a different pitcher than I saw, because, and you're not going to see this kind of analysis from afar with the prospect sites and things like that, because they're not looking under the hood. And I think you're starting to see guys like a Jared Seidler and some of these guys who, you know, who make their living independently, or if you want to call those prospect sites mainstream, whatever, writing about this stuff. They're even starting to say maybe the Mets have something going on from a development standpoint. It's a long time coming. That's going to be, and having been down in Tampa and experienced a little bit of what the Rays do, the investment in a team is not just that middle reliever or that fifth starter for $15 million a year. It's the people that you bring in that are doing the countless work, crunching numbers and providing information. And then it's the pitching development, the staff that, and the coaches and in the minor leagues, the big leagues that are working with these guys. And then, you know what? Part of it is the guy, you know, they're not robots. What you saw out of Scott, the poise and the attitude, you know, that's on him. And finding those guys, putting makeup into the equation and knowing that that's a kid that you can work with to potentially get to the point where we're talking about him. I know it's one start and seven innings or 6 2/3, but it's an exciting thing. So, all right, let's take a quick break. We're at Cinco de Mayo. The end of May is when we finish our getting to know you phase. I think we're starting to get to know the 2024 Mets, and it's a little concerning. I got to tell you that. So we'll take a quick break. More on that right after this.